Kathy Ladman has joined us now, winner of American Comedy Award. Yeah, the funniest female stand-up comedian. She's also an accomplished actress who's appeared in numerous films. Television shows include Pretty Little Liars. I think that, well, anyhow.
Teenage girls love that show.
That show's huge.
Love that show.
It's so autobiographical.
Oh, yeah.
taken for personal experience.
I'm dying up here.
Yeah. Mad Men.
Next performance coming up soon. Family. For those of you in Southern California, be sure to get over to the Matrix Theater on Melrose. It's going to be opening on August 18th, just a few days.
Yes.
And I'm going to be there.
When are you coming? On the 18th?
Lucy should have me there, I think.
Right.
Maybe I didn't respond, but you know what? It's a minor oversight. Put me on the review.
I don't know. I'll remind me, because just remind me. I'm going to have to, obviously, I can't speak to Lucy,
I'm telling you right now,
else.
You're
going
to have your review in 45 million newspapers around the world. That is a total lie.
Full disclosure.
We're a lying
don't
society.
Trust, yeah,
don't
why trust
not?
Anything I say.
I
mean, we're in LA.
We're talking about a woman who starred in Pretty Little Liars.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's keeping with the topic.
Well, okay.
I mean,
but do you normally do theater?
No, I haven't. You know, the last play that I did was 14 years ago.
Okay.
And this is a bigger production than anything that I've done in theater.
Okay. And how'd that happen? How'd you get introduced to it?
Well, Mark Lano and Joanne Astro, who wrote the show, I've known them for a long time, and they had me in mind. Mark used to be a co-owner of the Hollywood Improv. Okay. So I've known them for, and Joanne was a stand-up, and then she became a manager. So they've been in that world for a long time, and I knew them from the stand-up world.
Yeah.
And they had me in mind for this part, and they spoke to my manager, whose name is Judy, which you just said, and I didn't know why you said Judy, but that was interesting. And so I read for it, and I got the part.
Okay. And you're talking about how today is the last day of rehearsal?
Today's the last day of, like, it's of dress rehearsal, yes.
Okay.
And tomorrow and Friday we have previews, and then Saturday we open.
Wow, that's
great.
The
name of the show is?
Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin.
That alone is enough to make you want to go, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about Mark's life at a certain point in his life when he's a young man, and it's about when he goes back to his grandmother's boarding house where he grew up in Brooklyn, Brighton Beach, Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I play his grandmother.
Oh, that's not right. She play his baby sister.
No. I mean, he's a young man.
It's a little bit of a delayed response. He's also slightly rude.
Yes, that's so funny. he plays a young man in his early 20s. So I'm supposed to be in my late 60s.
Okay.
It's
a compliment that he wanted you to play his grandmother, I think.
I think it is a compliment.
Yeah.
It's very much of a compliment. Yes.
Now, in terms of stand-up, I know you're from New York?
Yes.
Okay. Did you start as a comedian, or were you actually a teacher beforehand?
I was a teacher.
Joke?
No, I was a teacher for 1 year.
Okay.
Outside of Philly.
Okay.
You taught in a school?
Real school, junior high.
Junior high?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
Is that what
eighth grade English. It used to be. I haven't done. I used to do material about that.
OMG. Little red pencil lady with dangling participles.
I am so good at grammar. And I'll tell you something. It really kills me because grammar is really becoming out of style now.
It's tough with, like, instant message and Twitter.
Emojis.
Right.
Because people don't use proper punctuation. People don't spell things out. But what really that doesn't bug me as much as people using, like, the wrong word, like using when people use the objective case instead of the subjective case. You know, when they say, when somebody says, him and me went, or her and I, or it just grates on me. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
And then I think ending a sentence with a preposition used to be, like, verboten, and now it's kind of become okay. I mean, look, language is living; it changes.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like an old you know, grouchy person.
The curmudgeon's like, hey.
Yeah, I don't want to be a grouchy person.
There's
but
no such thing as air regardless. But it's
still,
regardless.
But still, well, that's just not a word. I mean, that's. But the objective case instead of the subjective case, between she and I, wrong.
Okay.
Between her and me is the proper way to say
her
it.
Her and me. So is
because
it like,
between is a preposition, it takes the objective case.
Okay.
But nobody cares anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. I'm, you know, screaming into the void, really.
I can vaguely remember, like, sentences with boxes and,
right,
like,
dialoguing sentences.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yep.
Right.
With the
modifiers
and everything.
I had an amazing ninth grade, not a nice woman, Mrs. Jackson, but an amazing drill sergeant of a teacher. I mean, she taught us grammar, and it really... You know, it's interesting because I was always a better math and science student than an English student. And that was almost a technical and scientific part of English. It wasn't a creative part of English.
No, it was really technical, yeah.
So I think that's why I took to it so well. And then, of course, I go into the arts, which is, like, all creative. Like, I don't know, like... I can't trace myself, you know? I mean, I started out so differently than I became.
Yeah. Well, when you were teaching, did you ever at least have, like, an inkling that, maybe I like making people laugh?
No. I wanted to be a stand-up comic since I was, like, 13.
Okay, okay.
But I was too scared to do it. So, you know, of course, my mother, you know, nobody in my family is in the arts. I'm the only, in my extended family, I'm the only person. I mean, I'm talking about cousins and everything. I'm the only person in the arts. And, you know, when I told my mother that this is what I wanted to do, she said, well, you should get a degree to fall back on. I mean, it was all like, it's so fear-based.
Yeah.
You know, to not say, good for you, go do it, go for it. You know, get something as a safety net, you know? And so that's kind of how I grew up.
Yeah. It's like
very conventional.
The arts are like the only profession where people are like, all right, well, just in case you fail.
Exactly.
Have a backup plan.
I know,
like,
and it's such
I want to be a doctor. Okay, well, you're going to want to have a backup plan.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you should learn guitar.
You really should.
But it is kind of typical, I think. I mean, it's conventional. It's very conventional how I grew up. Ooh, okay. Wow. What was that?
What was your first performance in front of people, other than friends and mom?
Well, God, did you hear that swallow? Because I did. my first performance in front of people, the most significant thing that I can remember was when I did a play at Sleepaway Camp. Mm. I was in Once Upon a Mattress.
Oh,
remember that?
Yes.
It was with Carol Burnett. It was the musical of Princess and the Pea.
Okay.
And I played Princess Winifred, the Carol Burnett part. And it, first of all, I was terrified. When, you know, rehearsals were great, and then came the night that the performance, and I was terrified, and I convinced myself that I was sick, and I went to the infirmary, and the director had to come and, like, talk me off the ledge, and I mean, I was so scared. And then once I got out there, I just had the most amazing time, and that was, like, when I said, this is what I want to do. And I was encouraged by her. She said, you know, you really should think about doing this. So she was the first person in my life who saw that I had an affinity for this, you know.
And I'm sure, like, being a teacher in front of junior high students, like, they're pretty, what's the word?
Vicious.
Yeah, or, like, they're pretty observant. Like,
no,
they're
aware
of a lot
they're
of
attuned.
Different things. So, like,
yes.
That's sort of a good practice to be in front of people.
I can remember, like, one class, like the kids, I was standing at the door, and the kids are following out, and they go, funny class, Ms. Ladman, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, right.
Yeah,
that was good.
Like,
it was
okay,
a good feeling.
An honest response.
And I was young. I was a young teacher. I was 21, and my students were 13. So imagine that. I was only 8 years older than my students.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were just talking about this because I got involved in magic when I was about 10 or 11 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I did my very first magic show in front of about, I don't know, 10 people. And it was okay.
Uh-huh.
And then when I got done, I said, I'm now going to do one more magic act. I'm going to disappear from the stage forever.
You didn't like it.
It was too freaky. It was too stressed.
Yeah.
It's like, I know I'm going to do something stupid. I've only practiced it 10,000 times.
Right.
And everyone was like, you're all staring at me.
I know.
Look over there.
I know. Stop looking at me, you guys.
But that's when you do all the stage work, especially What could be the worst thing that happens? You walk out on stage, you tell what you think is funny, and you get nothing from the audience.
Right? Well, I mean, that happens. You know, yeah. I've been doing stand-up for 37 years, so that happens. I can't believe I've been doing it for 37 years. That's so old.
That's a great career. Was there anything that, like, really, like, just kind of, I guess for lack of better phrasing, spearheaded your desire for doing stand-up? Was there any particular moment or something that really just made you go,
well, you know? When I was very little, when I was about 8, I used to listen to my parents' comedy albums, and one in particular really stuck with me, Nichols and May Examine Doctors. Are you familiar with Nichols and May?
Mm-hmm.
You
no.
should,
no.
Oh my God, you got to go listen to them. Mike Nichols and Elaine May were this incredible improv team, and Mike Nichols, of course, became a fabulous director,
right.
And Elaine May, of course, a writer and a director, hilarious person. And they were magical. And this particular album was Nichols and May Examine Doctors, and every sketch on the show, and they were really big in the 60s.
Okay, it was
and
like a
every sketch
album.
On the show, on the album, was something doctor related. Mm-hmm. You know, patient doctor, there was one with Dr. Schweitzer, there was one in an operating room, and hilarious. I so encourage you to listen to them. And so I listened to this album and listened and listened and listened, and I memorized it. And at night when my mom would come into my room, I would say my prayers, which seems really weird to me. And then I would do a selection off the album for her. And she didn't know what to make of it. She was like, oh, that's nice, you know. Very nice. Not that. It wasn't that. I can tell you that much.
The antithesis is more like,
yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Keep
right,
doing your
then.
Homework.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Mike Nichols signed my album. And so I still have to get Elaine. I was in two of Mike Nichols' films.
Right,
and then
yeah.
one time at the Comedy Awards, he was being honored. So I brought the album with me with the Sharpie. And I asked him to sign it. And and now I've got to get Elaine May's signature on it somehow. I don't
wow.
know how to meet her, but I have to figure that out.
Well, Elaine, if you're listening, we need your signature.
Yeah.
We need your
yeah.
signature on this album.
Do you remember your first show?
First stand-up show?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was actually prior to when I really started. It
okay.
was when I was a teacher. I went to this room in Philly. After that year, it was the summer, I found out about this room in Philly called Grandma Minnie's. And I went to the open mic night twice in a row. And the first time I was there, Rich Hall was there. Do you remember Rich Hall? Sniglets?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was there. And this was at a time when he was living out in his car, just traveling around. And he told me one of my jokes was really funny. And the MC was someone that I really became friends with later in New York and whom I still know now, Joe Bolster. But I did it twice, and then I decided to move out to Los Angeles because this is what I think happened for me. New York was too viable because I was in Philly. I'm from New York. New York's very close to Philly, so moving to New York was just the possibility was too big that I was going to actually get on stage. So I decided I was going to move to Los Angeles. I was going to move across the country, and that was going to be the magic bullet for me. Of course, when I got here, this was in 1977. When I got here, I did not go near a comedy club. I was terrified. I lasted 4 months here, and I moved back to New York into my parents' house, and then I had some shitty jobs. You can say shitty on this show. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you
okay.
did.
I mean, but you okay. can, right? It's not... Yeah, see?
It's,
they like
I'm,
it.
It's big.
Audience
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't matter.
And,
fecal matter tainted job.
And,
yeah. Poopy.
And then, and then I just couldn't stand not doing it.
Yeah.
And I had to do it. It was just too painful to not do it. So I started when I was, like 25 and a half.
25. Okay.
And
so let's see. Do you still get nerves a little bit before you go on stage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there are different kinds of nerves. There are excited nerves, and there are terrified nerves. There are a whole plethora of nervousness you can experience. Oh, God, I remember this one time. I was actually shooting a movie. I think it was Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, which I'm still actually remembered from. It's so interesting. I mean, it was so many years ago. And I had to go right from the set to get on a plane. I don't think I'm conflating this. I think this was the time I had to get right on a plane and fly to London to tape this show, this live show. So I had my set. I ran it at the Comedy Store that night in London for the producers, and they wanted to reorder the set. Now, I'm working on, like, no sleep here.
Yeah.
So I had to reorder the set. It was the same material, but they wanted the opening different. They wanted the closing different. So I had to remember the order of the set. And then I get on stage, and I do my first joke, and I go completely blank. This is a live show.
Oh.
Completely blank. And I remember putting my face in my hands, just like yeah. I was like horrified, and I went, my mother. And I remembered a joke, and I did the next joke, and then right at the end of that joke, another one came into my head. So I did everything that I was supposed to do, not one fewer, not one more, but in a completely different order. And after I got off that stage, I was mortified. I mean, my manager was there, and I was crying. I felt horrible. I mean, I felt like this was the end for me. And then when we watched it, it ran again, and we watched it. It wasn't bad at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But the experience was horrible.
Yeah.
That was a different kind of nervousness.
I imagine, like, time is slowed down for the person on stage because people that are watching don't know.
Oh, my God.
Just experiencing
and
it.
My second Tonight Show was weird, too. My first Tonight Show, I had a great time, and I was, you know.
You're talking, this was with Johnny Carson.
Is this,
actually, this
Leno,
one, I, well, it was when Leno was guest hosting. My first two were with Leno. The first one I was supposed to do with Johnny, and then I was bumped. And then when I was scheduled, it was with Jay, which was in some ways better because I knew Jay, and it was a little bit less nerve wracking. So I had a great show, and then 2 months later, I go back on, and I think, well, this one's going to be even better, not realizing that nothing can possibly compare to a first time. Mm-hmm. It's just itself.
Yeah, that specialness is.
Yeah, it's not a hierarchy. Yeah. It doesn't get better. It's just and. When I got out there, it was just weird, and I felt surreal, and I didn't feel like it was going well at all, and it was great, and I spoke to Jay's wife after the show, and she said, I think this was even better than your first one, which was not my personal experience at all.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
Yeah, so there you go. Now, what is funny? What makes something funny?
I think what makes something funny is very subjective. It's experiential. It's between the two entities. It's between the thing that's funny and the person receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what's funny to one person is not always funny to another person. I mean, I can watch comedy that has some people rolling and it doesn't make me laugh at all.
Yeah.
And then I can watch something that's funny and another person will think,
yeah,
well, that's not funny.
Or it could be like a situation too, I imagine. You know, sometimes you'll have someone tell a story about their horrible day.
Yes.
But it's actually pretty funny if they were just on the outside of it.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's a completely subjective thing. It's intangible. That's what I think. It's not.
It's going to make it tough for you to work on your material because.
Well, I have to do what I think is funny, and I have to do what suits me. What suits me as a performer.
Okay.
And then, I mean, ultimately, what everybody wants is to build an audience that wants to come to see you.
Right. Right.
I mean, and you know, when you go into a comedy club. Like the Comedy Store, the Improv, or something like that, and you do a show, the audience is not there necessarily to see you. They're just there to see a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
You don't know what it's going to be. Excuse me. But if I'm going to do, like, I'm going to do a show September 14th in Spokane, Washington, at the Bing Theater, that's billed. I'm the show. So people are going who want to come see me will come to see me. And that's different. That's a different experience.
You a comfort level too.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
They know what they're in for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm guessing that when you do sets at clubs, that's sort of like the training grounds for the new material, or
Sometimes. But you know what? Also, a long show is a good place to put in some new stuff too. And I'll tell you something. Well, while I haven't been doing stand up for the past 5 weeks or so because I've been rehearsing for this show. For Jews, Christians, and Screwing Stalin. Let me say it again. Yeah. At the Matrix Theater, opening this Saturday, August 18th, with previews August 16th and 17th. Yes.
Is that funny or dramatic?
Oh, it's a comedy.
Okay,
it's a comedy. Yes.
Yeah. The title would suggest that. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I haven't had time or the headspace to do it because I've been all about learning my lines, learning my character, learning the blocking, and plus there's a lot of physical time that I've been putting into this.
Yeah,
right. I mean, even today, this is a long day for me. I'm coming here, then I'm going to the theater at 3, and I don't get out till 11. I'm not going to be home till midnight.
Yeah.
So these days, I mean, these are particularly long days, but the early days of rehearsing have been a little bit shorter, but still pretty extensive and intense.
Yeah, and it's not just about the time you're there. You have to also focus afterwards.
It's the headspace, really. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a little, I got to get back. Once the play starts, I'm going to make sure I get on stage a couple of times before I go to Spokane.
My daughter has done a lot of acting, and she's just graduated USC. She wasn't in drama. She was in communications, but now for some odd reason, she's dusted off her SAG-AFTRA card, and she wants to go out and do this again. But what I don't understand is it is so much work, and just like getting off book is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm working on it one page at a time for something I wrote.
I know.
How much harder for other person's material, and you have to learn how to interact with the other characters all these things. It's a severely hard job.
It really is. And, you know, also, I love – excuse me.
Okay, we'll take a little break here while we let our guest Kathy
I love working.
Take a little drink and there you go.
I love working with other people.
Not bad.
That was delicious.
And, Dom Perignon.
I love working with other people. As a stand-up, I work – by myself. And being collaborative is really great. But it also puts another level of pressure on me personally. I mean, I don't know how other people feel. I assume they might feel like this. But I feel a great deal of responsibility towards the other people because I want to be there for them.
Right. Yeah.
I want to support their work. If I go up in a line, that makes it harder for other people. So we gotta be
like
there. We gotta carry each other.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So it's a different experience, and it's both exciting and terrifying.
Yeah.
And Kathy, actually, I wanted to ask you because I amidst like looking up all your stand up, getting to see like the TED Med talk that you did.
Oh yes.
All the different things. I noticed that you also were part of a publication of Moms Are Nuts, book, and I was really curious to kind of just get to hear about one your experience with that, working on that because it was a collaborative piece,
right.
And then also just your personal take from working on something like that.
Well, I mean that. It wasn't really collaborative in that sense because we each wrote our own stories about our experiences, either being a mom or having a mom.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that wasn't the same as the collaboration I'm doing in
right,
the theater.
Of course.
But I mean, also becoming a mom late in life has really informed a lot of my work. You know, I was 48 when we adopted my daughter.
Yeah.
Right. Right. She just turned 15.
Okay.
Help.
That's exciting.
It's really hard. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have you had teenage daughters? Oh,
I have
God.
A granddaughter living with us now. She's just about 11. She's right
on the
cusp.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, you hear about it. It's like everything else in life. You hear about it and you go, yeah. But when you start experiencing these things, you go, yeah, yeah,
that's what you were talking about.
It's very interesting. And then I think about how I was when I was 15. I know I was tough. I mean, I know I was tough because I was unhappy. Mm-hmm. So that had to be hard for my mom.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I can't even remember the piece that I wrote for Moms Are Nuts. I may have written the piece about about when we went to adopt my daughter. I think that's what it was about. I remember one joke in it. I was so not used to having that responsibility, and the movie Million Dollar Baby was out in the theaters at that point, and I remember strolling my daughter down Main Street and, you know, not being able to go to the movies. And I was thinking, God, I can't go see Million Dollar Baby because I'm here with $20,000 Baby. they like it.
Hey, there you go.
But, I mean, it's a shock becoming a parent.
Yeah.
It is, but it's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
I'm sure
how many kids do you have? Three?
Well, it depends on how you count.
Depends on how you count.
I have a grand total of five that I'm aware of.
A grand total of five?
That I'm aware of, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
There's a possibility, you know.
Okay.
But I don't know.
All right.
Five confirmed.
But you were talking about mothers. And
yes.
largely due to mine. I left home at 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
I found a place and... It was okay. So it's part of my book, 5150, by the
way. Wow.
But
at 11. I left home at 16.
Well,
that's way different.
Mom got a little bit off. My dad was a band member, a drummer, and he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, what did she do the minute they got married? Get a real job.
Mm.
He thought being a band leader and a drummer was a real job.
Right.
And, yeah. So it kind of got nasty. But then it got worse because when my mother... divorced my dad, she became a cougar.
Oh.
And she fell in with this guy that was like 12 years older than me. So he could have been an older brother.
Yeah, that's odd.
That's a little complicated.
And, yeah. No, it wasn't complicated at all. Mom said, what'd you think of him? I think he's a scumbag, dirtball. I hope I never see him again. 2 weeks later, they got married.
Oh, God.
So much for Mom asking for my opinion.
Wow. Well,
when I realized, okay, I have to do something about this. And there's no way my dad could have done anything because that was back in the day when if you're the dad, you lose, period. And if I, you know, he'd take me back in, she'd sue him for more child support, whatever the hell. I mean, it would have been ugly.
Yeah.
So he just said, I love you, Ronnie, but I can't help you. And we did find accommodations
wow.
and it was okay. But that was just like, okay.
Wow.
Hey, my dad moved out of the house one night when I was 10 because Mom decided to chase him around the house with a butcher's knife. And Dad's left.
He didn't like that game very much.
Yeah.
No.
It's not fun.
And, no. And, you know, there are no winners in that game.
No.
Well, yeah. This is why I say firearm control. Breathe, relax, aim, squeeze. Takes care of butcher knives. It's a Marine Corps thing. I'm sorry. You have to da-dump bump. Okay, so forget it.
Okay.
Yeah. My horrible
the audience wasn't happy
humor.
With that.
This is why I don't have your job.
Well, but you know, these stories that you're what you're telling us now is very, it really makes sense that you joined the Marines. You were desperate for structure.
Oh yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. And my first year in the Marine Corps was unbelievably cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I ended up in Hong Kong at a party all night with Bill Holden.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Wow.
You know, you don't do that kind of stuff
right.
around here.
Right.
Well, you think you could. People come from all over the world
yeah.
thinking they're going to do it. Like, not at Hollywood and Highland, buddy.
Don't take the CDs. Before we go, you said you left at 16? What?
Yes, I went to college.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
mean,
a show off.
Because you did say
no,
you were
not
a teacher.
A show off.
You were 21 when you started.
I was 20, and then I turned 21 while I was teaching.
So you must have graduated early. Okay.
I did. But, yeah. I was smart, but that's not really why. I was an October baby, and back then, you didn't hold kids back from kindergarten, so I started kindergarten when I was just shy of five.
Okay.
Then, in New York City, we had something called SP in junior high, which is special progress. You took a test, and you could either take the two-year SP or the three-year SP, and I already knew I wanted out of the house, so I rallied, and I got the two-year SP. So that put me 1 year ahead. Then, when I was in high school, I found out I could graduate a half a year early, so I did that.
Okay.
So that really pushed me ahead, and I went to college when I was just barely 16. I was 16 wow. in October, wow. and I went to college in January.
See, the only reason I graduated high school is because they needed my chair.
Yeah. Right, right. You said, yeah.
You're so generous. I like that. Well, I have one more thing. Like, I wanted to hear, like, what your favorite joke of yours is. Okay, that might be a tough one. But the... how you come up with jokes? Because I imagine it isn't something where you're just like, okay, let's try to be funny here.
Well,
or is it like
you think? I mean, I think of things. I just think of things that are funny to me. Like I'm working on something about, you know, like lost pets. But I love animals, and I get notifications when a dog or cat is lost in the neighborhood, so I keep my eye out for that. And then I got one for a lost bird, and I was thinking like that might be funny because how do you? You find it, and then I found it, and I lost it. You know? And so it's like how do you catch a lost bird? Yeah. So I mean, some things like that will come to me. But
are they lost or they yeah. escaped? We don't
I
know.
Mean, I think the funniest things that I do, well, not necessarily some of the funniest things I do are really out of my life. Mm-hmm. Like one of my favorite jokes that I do is about my dog. I love my dog so much. My dog Chappie. And he's, which unfortunately was Donald Trump's dog's name, I later learned. Oof. But we adopted Chappie, and he came with the name, so we just kept the name. Oh, yeah. But then I found out that he had a poodle named Chappie. But the dog didn't like him, so I feel good. Vindicated.
Yeah. Is this some sort of a commentary on your opinion of Trump?
On what? On my opinion of Trump?
We love Trump on this show.
You love Trump?
Oh, yeah, we sure do.
Yep. Oh, boy, yeah, I can tell.
Super fans. Yeah.
I can tell.
Big in LA, everything.
So,
I interrupt.
Yeah. But so do I have time?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, you're good.
So I love Chappie, and I adore him. And when I'm home and I'm writing, I'll get up and I'll go find. I mean, I often just go look for him and hug him and cuddle him, and yeah. I find him like sleeping in a little dog. You know, the dog coil how yeah. they sleep, and yeah. his eyes are closed into little slits. And I just, oh my God, I think I love him so much. I can't stand it. I think like I will never love another creature as much as I love him. And then I walk down the hall and I look into the bedroom and I see my husband napping, and I'm filled with resentment. And this is, you know. This is very true. This is completely experiential for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. So it's about taking
that
feeling
and making
it fun.
Those are my favorite things to do on stage.
Okay.
Because I just relive them every time.
Okay. Our guest has
been.
That's how I like
time.
To end a joke. Yeah. Okay.
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 Well, now the Ladman has been with us. Go see her show coming up on the 18th of August.
Please come see it. It's running through September 23rd. It's Saturday
Jews,
night.
Christians and Screwing Stalin. You can't go wrong just with that title.
Saturday, no. Monday nights, Sunday matinee.
There you go. And perfect. Give them a call. Check it out. Look it up. Google it.
Plays411.com.
Plays411.com. Go do it. You'll be happy that you did. And we're going to be back next week with We Don't Know What. And then coming up the week after. What? Well, we're not sure. We had a guest, but, you know, it's time things change. Some people, we had this a guest one time and ended up in Hawaii doing a movie.
Wow. Darn. This is life. Well,
yeah,
you know?
So we'll go. We have a little bit of music, please, and then we'll say goodbye.
All right.
There you go.